for me to understand the drift of his talk. He seemed always just about to tell me something, the very idea of which evidently frightened him. But each time he pulled himself up, saying, as he crossed himself, "Walpurgis Nacht." I tried to argue with him. But it was difficult to argue with a man when I did not know his language. The advantage certainly rested with him, for although he began to speak in English, of a very crude and broken kind, he always got excited and broke into his native tongue, and every time he did so he looked at his watch. Then the horses became restless and sniffed the air. At this he grew very pale, and, looking around in a frightened way, he suddenly jumped forward, took them by the bridles, and led them on some 20 feet. I followed, and asked why he had done this. For answer he crossed himself, pointed to the spot we had left, and drew his carriage in the direction of the other road, indicating a cross, and said, first in German, then in English,
"Buried him. Him what killed themselves."
I remembered the old custom of burying suicides at crossroads. "Ah, I see, a suicide. How interesting." But for the life of me, I could not make out why the horses were frightened. Whilst we were talking, we heard a sort of sound between a yelp and a bark. It was far away, but the horses got very restless, and it took Johann all his time to quiet them. He was pale and said,
"It sounded like a wolf, but yet there are no wolves here now."
"No?" I said, questioning him. "Isn't it long since the wolves were so near the city?"
"Long, long," he answered, "in the spring and summer, but with the snow the wolves have been here not so long."
Whilst he was petting the horses and trying to quiet them, dark clouds drifted rapidly across the sky. The sunshine passed away, and a breath of cold wind seemed to drift past us. It was only a breath, however, and more in the nature of a warning than a fact, for the sun came out brightly again. Johann looked under his lifted hand at the horizon and said,
"The storm of snow, he comes before a long time."
Then he looked at his watch again, and straightway, holding his reins firmly, for the horses were still pawing the ground restlessly, and shaking their heads, he climbed to his box as though the time had come for proceeding on our journey. I felt a little obstinate, and did not at once get into the carriage. "Tell me," I said, "about this place where the road leads," and I pointed down. Again he crossed himself and mumbled a prayer before he answered,
"It is unholy."
"What is unholy?" I inquired.
"The village."
"Then there is a village."
"No, no. No one lives there hundreds of years."
My curiosity was piqued. "But you said there was a village."
"There was."
"Where is it now?" Whereupon he burst out into a long story in German and English, so mixed up that I could not quite understand exactly what he said. But roughly, I gathered that long ago, hundreds of years, men had died there and been buried in their graves, and sounds were heard under the clay, and when the graves were opened, men and women were found rosy with life, and their mouths red with blood. And so, in haste to save their lives, aye, and their souls, and here he crossed himself, those who were left fled away to other places, where the living lived, and the dead were dead, and not something. He was evidently afraid to speak the last words. As he proceeded with his narration, he grew more and more excited. It seemed as if his imagination had got hold of him, and he ended in a perfect paroxysm of fear, white-faced, perspiring, trembling, and looking round him, as if expecting that some dreadful presence would manifest itself there, in the bright sunshine on the open plain. Finally, in an agony of desperation, he cried, "Walpurgis Nacht!" and pointed to the carriage for me to get in. All my English blood rose at this, and standing back, I said,
"You are afraid, Johann, you are afraid. Go home. I shall return alone."